home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush. 58 yards. Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in. 92 yards.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame. 98 yards. 76-yard touchdown play to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside. Touchdown, Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front, Ogilvy. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Gets up and in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left. Notre Dame leads.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. Presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And we're also brought to you by Sport Clips. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday evening. Coming up on the program, in our opening segment, some discussion on the college football playoff rankings unveiled last night. Plus, you'll hear from one of the Irish captains, starting left tackle Mike McGlinchey, who will play his final game at Notre Dame Stadium on Saturday when the Irish face the United States Naval Academy. Kickoff at 3:41 on 96.1 FM WSBT. Today is Wednesday, so that means at noon at IndyInsider.com. Eric hosted another IndyInsider.com chat, and we will recap that chat coming up in our second segment. My five question of the day, one more look back at the Miami game, the five things that surprised Eric the most about Notre Dame coming up short, losing to Miami 41-8. Coming up next hour, more college football playoff discussion, rapid fire. You will hear from Notre Dame hockey player Andrew Peak. He is an outstanding sophomore defenseman for the fourth-ranked Fighting Irish hockey team that currently leads the Big Ten with a record of 4-0. Our live conversation with Andrew is coming up in about an hour and 25 minutes here on WSBT Radio. Also next hour, you will hear from Notre Dame senior linebacker Greer Martini. And we have to offer a couple of thoughts on what was some incredible basketball last night at the United Center. Number one versus number two. Duke and Michigan State squaring off, the Blue Devils, the late surge. And they were able to pull off the victory over Michigan State 88-81. I felt like Michigan State played really well, but Duke is loaded. They are really, really good. They're big along their front line. They came out in a zone, which is in a big-time change in philosophy for Mike Krzyzewski, and that length kind of reminded you of Syracuse at times. Duke got it done. Kansas held off Kentucky last night. Terrific top-10 basketball at the United Center last night. Speaking of basketball, the Irish men's basketball team, they'll return to action tomorrow night at 7 o'clock right here on WSBT Radio. They will take on Chicago State. Now, because basketball is playing on Thursday, what do we do at the Brian Kelly Radio Show? Well, it's going to happen, but it's going to move to our sister station, 94.3 WZOC. So Thursday, tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, WZOC 94.3 FM, we'll have the Brian Kelly Radio Show. And here on WSBT Radio, it will be Fighting Irish basketball against Chicago State. So 94.3, jot it down. That's where the Brian Kelly Radio Show will be tomorrow night. And that will be your home for Fighting Irish hockey Friday and Saturday as they play a non-conference series at RPI. So that's what's happening schedule-wise on our WSBT radio stations. Let's start digging into the college football playoff rankings unveiled last night for a third time by the 13-member college football playoff selection committee. After no changes last week, lots of changes this week with Georgia and Notre Dame going down in their respective games on Saturday, both losing on the road to Auburn and Miami respectively, and those two teams shot up the rankings last night. First, Notre Dame started the week at number three after losing to Miami. They are now number eight in the latest college football playoff rankings. A lot of conversation with Irish fans last night on social media. Is there still a chance to get up to number four? It looks like on paper you might be able to do it, but it's going to take a lot of things going your way. To me, you need Alabama and Miami to run the table in the way I look at trying to figure out a way to get up to number four. Let Alabama and Miami win out. Miami losing to Clemson does not help the Irish, because that means Clemson goes and there is still a chance Miami goes. In fact, there's, I would say, an outstanding, realistic speaking, Miami's going to stay ahead of Notre Dame. So you just want Miami to win out at this point, run the table, Alabama run the table, and then hope for chaos that TCU beats Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game. So you got to get them out of the way. Somehow, some way, Oklahoma would fall into that two-loss group, which could be very large if we're talking about chaos happening at the top of the polls. Also, you take a look at Wisconsin. You may need Michigan to be your best friend. Michigan needs to beat Ohio State, and then Michigan, maybe they can beat Wisconsin in some chaotic turn in the Big Ten. So Wisconsin would have to lose. Auburn need them to lose to Alabama to get them out of the way. Georgia would need to lose to Alabama. So there's a long list of things that would need to happen. I don't want to say it's impossible, because there does seem to be a wild, wild, wild way for them to get up there, but it's very, very unlikely. I mean, it would be the perfect storm to get Notre Dame back into that top four. But hey, go out, play the games, dominate, and let the chips fall where they may. For Notre Dame right now, they are in full control of a spot in the New Year's Six Bowl festivities. The committee will pick those teams after they select the four teams to go to the college football playoffs. And as Eric has explained, as long as Notre Dame stays in the top 10 of the college football playoff rankings, they are going to be going to one of those New Year Bowl six games, which would be more than likely the Cotton Bowl on December 29th, maybe against a Big 12 or a Big 10 team. The Orange Bowl is a possibility on December 30th as well, maybe against the loser of Clemson, Miami, although they probably don't want a rematch of Notre Dame and Miami. So the Cotton Bowl seems to be the leading possibility if the Irish stay in the top 10 of the college football playoff rankings. So that's where the Irish sit right now, number 8 in the college football playoff rankings. And among teams that have two losses this year, Notre Dame is number 2 in that category. Auburn is number 6. They're an 8-2 football team. They lost to Clemson earlier this year. And you've got Ohio State right behind Notre Dame, Penn State, USC, TCU, Oklahoma State, Washington State. So 8 through 14 are all two-loss teams. So a lot of jumbled teams right now in these college football rankings as the committee is splitting hairs trying to rank those particular teams. But the Irish number 8 in the latest college football playoff rankings. Mike McGlinchey met the media today, the Fighting Irish starting left tackle, one of the favorites of all the Notre Dame media members, getting a chance to talk to him as the captains talk to the media today. And you have a feeling, if you've listened to Mike McGlinchey through the years, he always speaks his mind. He is very outspoken, and he is a very emotional guy. So Saturday might be a bit of a challenge for the big left tackle. And Mike was asked today to describe his emotions going into his final game at Notre Dame Stadium.
Well, it's kind of hard to believe that 5 years is up. It's tough. It's bittersweet. I know I've put everything I had into this place and Notre Dame and this team and this university, and it's a little bittersweet. It stinks that I'm not going to be able to come back and play in Notre Dame Stadium anymore after this week. We've had a hell of a season, and it's been an emotional roller coaster. And just want to make sure we go out against the rest of the senior class, not just myself, and getting a win against Navy this week.
Yeah, we know for sure that 7 members have exhausted their eligibility at the end of this year. 26 seniors will be honored on Saturday before the Irish take on the United States Naval Academy. And Mike talked today about dealing with those emotions before Senior Day.
Yeah, you know what? I've been trying not to think about it too much. It's definitely going to be hard for me. I think a lot of people can attest to this, that I love this place with everything I got, and I've always worked and wanted to put my best effort and play forward for this place, for my teammates, for my coaches, and you know, just at Notre Dame in general. And it's something that I'll always treasure. I consider myself the luckiest man in the world to be able to play football at this awesome place here. And it's going to be tough. I don't know if I'll be able to think about it right in the tunnel, because I have a job to do. But afterwards, when or if we get the win and singing that alma mater for the last time in the stadium, I'll probably be a little bit of a mess.
There's no doubt about that. Mike is a guy that wears his emotions on his sleeves. Here is Mike today talking about if there was one memory that's going to stand out about being a Notre Dame football player and playing at Notre Dame Stadium.
You know, I think I'm going to remember this season as a whole. I think that coming from where we came from and the state of the program and where it was last year, and being a captain of that team and then being a captain of this team and the amount of turnaround that we were able to have is something that's very, very memorable. And I take a lot of pride in being able to be a part of it. On top of the main thing that I'm really going to take away from this place are the relationships that I've built. I've made the best friends in the world. I've been mentored by some of the greatest coaches and other players that you could ever ask for. So I think that anybody who really knows this place is the best part about it is the people that you get to meet, and that's the thing that I'll be talking about for the rest of my life, not just in the next 10 to 15 years.
One final soundbite from Mike McGlinchey in this segment. Brian Kelly, the head coach of the Fighting Irish, discussed earlier this week about dealing with the distractions and the emotion of that Miami experience, something that may have to be talked to his players the next time they're in that particular situation. And today, McGlinchey was asked about the experience of playing down in Miami. If anything stood out, here's what the Irish left tackle had to say.
That college football is a crazy beast, and no matter what the Saturday is or what your opponent is, you got to bring it to the best of your ability, because it's you know, as hard as it's hard of a thing you have to do is win each and every Saturday, and Miami was certainly a fantastic opponent, and it was an unbelievable atmosphere, and having that kind of an experience to draw from, and we didn't come out on the right side of that, but I think that gaining that experience, especially for our younger guys and for the team and the program as a whole, of getting a little taste of where we could be, is just that much more of a driving force, I think. That kind of a feeling you don't ever want to have, and coming out of the side that we did on Saturday certainly allows us to learn of how to better prepare ourselves mentally, physically, and just know that each opportunity is needs to be cherished and treated as such, and it's so important to take each game with a great amount of pride and a great amount of focus in order to win the game. And I think that that's where we learned a lot, and I think that's where we're going to continue to learn.
Thanks. Great stuff from Mike McGlinchey, the starting left tackle of the Fighting Irish, preparing for his final game at Notre Dame Stadium on Saturday. Bring in Eric into the conversation. Going by just a couple of the questions in your chat and then just some of the social media chatter, I think if there are fans that are quickly to criticize the offensive line for not opening holes in this Miami game, I think they're being a little unfair. I think this is a multi-layered issue with what happened to the run game on Saturday, Eric. Miami was daring Notre Dame to throw the football, and Eric, they could not consistently do so. If you hit some of those throws like they did against Wake Forest, what did Wake Forest do? They dropped their safeties back. Then you run the ball down their throat. The offensive line needs help. This is still an outstanding group. But if you're outnumbered, it's one heck of a challenge. It's not the Justice League offensive line where they can just use their superpowers to throw Miami around. These guys needed a little help. And as we have discussed, and I don't want to continue to pound it, but again, Brandon Wimbush was not used as a running weapon in this game, one of the true weapons on offense. Maybe he was compromised health-wise, and that's why he didn't run. The fact was he didn't run, and that hurts the effectiveness, I think, of this offensive line. So, Eric, I think it's too easy for people to throw the offensive line under the bus when they rushed for 109 yards. There were many things that went into the running game stalling out against Miami, including Miami executing their game plan extremely well. You got to be able to throw the football. There's got to be a tad bit of balance, especially against these elite defenses, because if you don't make them honest, it's going to be very difficult for the offensive line to do their job.
Absolutely. And yeah, in my chat, I think this is the reaction that I would expect if Notre Dame lost to Navy on top of the Miami game. I just felt like, I got some Notre Dame's never going to win another national championship, and
Lou Holtz,
the speed and all this stuff. Look, I mean, let's say the rotation was different this year and Notre Dame didn't play Miami. Let's say they played Syracuse instead. Okay, if you were comparing the resumes, you're going to compare the North Carolina games when Notre Dame beat them by 23 on the road with a backup quarterback, and Miami was very, very lucky to win. I just felt, as I go into it, I think what you said is perfect, that there are a lot of layers to what went wrong, but I do think the choice not to run the quarterback was a big one in that, just the fact of how much success lesser offenses have had against Miami with running the quarterback, and the fact that Wimbush is, industrial strength running quarterback compared to Eric Dungy and Elliott from North Carolina. There's no comparison. He's much, much better. And, that's what he does well. And maybe by having some success running, he would have maybe had a little bit more confidence in the passing game once he saw. I mean, look at the Boston College game. He had a really bad passing game against, that was the number two, still the number two pass defense in the country, but he ran all over them. Why that wasn't employed, I think that's a lesson that Chip Long has to learn. Again, if he was physically compromised, then say
different story. Yeah. Absolutely. But maybe they're not going to say that with two games to go, Eric. Maybe they have to hold their cards.
Yeah, but we've asked that over and over again, so we cannot force them to say that he was injured. The question's been asked. That is their answer, and we're going to go with that.
Correct.
At this point. Now, against Navy and Stanford, especially Navy, I don't know that you really have to run him that much. Against Stanford, maybe. They're improving defensively. They're not very good, but they're improving defensively. They got a heck of a nose guard. I know that. I watch them play a lot just because I have to. I don't have to watch. I could watch Nickelodeon, but I watch Pac-12 games when I get home from the Notre Dame games and I'm waiting to do my vote. And Stanford's on a lot, so I see them play a lot and know a lot about their team. I've probably seen them play as much as any team in the country other than Notre Dame.
Miami used screens in that game. Misdirection is something a lot of people talked about.
Yeah.
The Irish just decided not to go in those directions. And unfortunately, the run game just didn't produce what we were expecting.
Right. Early in the season when they played Georgia and lost, I said this could be a rerun against Miami. Then as the season went on and Miami wasn't a good run defense.
Not at all.
I started pulling away from that statement and saying, okay, well, maybe not, But again, when you look at the teams that had success running the ball against Miami, they ran their quarterbacks and ran them successfully.
Eric, there were a couple of times being a part of Countdown to Kickoff on WNDU before home games, Angelo DiCarlo and Chuck Freebie asked me, can Notre Dame get to the playoff with a one-dimensional offense? And I said yes, because I felt like Brandon was going to steadily improve throwing the football.
Right.
Plus, as you just talked about, Miami had not looked impressive. Syracuse quarterback ran all over them. I'm not sure Carolina's quarterback had done that when they asked me that particular question. But I felt confident knowing...
And that's not even Carolina's number one quarterback. So that's number three.
Absolutely. I just have always felt like Wimbush is the guy that scares the heck out of the opposition when he's got the football in his hands. And not to have him doing what I expected him to do thwarted my thoughts that a one-dimensional type offense could run the table. And I still think they could have. But for whatever reason, the weapon was kept in the back pocket against the Miami Hurricanes. So when I thought about the Miami game, I thought Brandon was going to have a big day running the football, and that's why I felt Notre Dame could run the table and get to the playoff with a so-called one-dimensional offense.
We've seen that the quarterback, even when Kizer was the quarterback, there were some games where...
design runs.
Right, there were design runs. There were a couple of games in 2015. Clemson really bottled up the traditional running game, and Kizer running... And also Kizer throwing the ball, they put C.J. Procise out wide and threw him some deep pass patterns, and that also loosened things up. But they adjusted in that game at Clemson, and they came roaring back and had a chance to win. Temple was another game where C.J. Procise was bottled up. The traditional running game was bottled up, but Kizer had a huge game running the ball. And that's what makes this such a head-scratcher.
Absolutely. Without question. Well said. It is now 27 minutes after the top of the hour. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. IndyInsider.com chat recap coming up in our next segment.
Notre Dame football fans ask the questions. Eric Hansen gives them answers. This is the NDInsider.com chat recap on WSBT Radio's Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Well, I was happy to see that you pulled back some of the normal rules for today's chat following that loss to Miami. A little whining was allowed.
Yep.
And bare feet was allowed today.
Yes. And if you whined, you were supposed to be creative, and not everybody did that, but most people did. There were some creative people on there today, but it was.
Instead of paragraphs, a couple of people had chapters.
Yeah, one guy, I think, wrote so long that he ran out of room that I think he passed the character limit, and so I never got to answer his question because he was giving me kind of a manifesto before he got into his question.
All right, there was a lot of Wimbush stuff in here, so let's go through some of these. I know some of the answers are going to be a little repetitive if you listen to the program the last couple of days, but this is what people wanted to talk about at the IndyInsider.com chat earlier today with Eric Hansen. Roger from Detroit. Eric, you said we're off and running. I wish the Irish would have had Wimbush off and running Saturday against Miami. Heard your radio conversation last night. I just don't get not using one of your best weapons. And we've touched on that quite a bit.
Yeah, and I mean, he ended up with 11 rushes, but five of those were sacks.
A couple were pass scrambles.
Yeah, he gained 50 yards on the six rushes that he was either scrambling or he was running, but yeah, you just didn't see much of him, and it's that seems like a game that he would be around 20.
The 11 rush is very deceiving if you didn't watch the game. Eric from Chicago. Eric, I was listening to Weekday Sports Beat and was a bit surprised to hear you place so much of the blame offensively on the coaching staff. It is hard to do much when your quarterback has the yips and cannot complete a three-yard pass. Eric from Chicago says Wimbush's mechanics are an absolute mess right now. Do you think Tom Reese is a guy with the experience and knowledge to fix this? I think the lack of a seasoned quarterback coach is really hampering Wimbush's development. That's Eric from Chicago's opinion.
Yeah, I think we're going to find out, and I'm digging into that. But one of the things I dug in today, I kind of went back and looked at who the top 10 passers are in the country right now and what they look like as first-year starters. And Baker Mayfield, who is setting the NCAA record right now for passing efficiency at over 200, was at 127.8 as a first-year starter. Mackenzie Milton, UCF's quarterback, who's number two, was in the 90s. I went back and of the top 10 quarterbacks, almost everyone had a number that was similar to Brandon Wimbush's. So that doesn't mean Brandon Wimbush is also going to progress like they did, but it's also to say that that first year starting, I wouldn't write somebody off because they have a number like that. There's certainly things that have to improve, and I think it would have been nice to see improvement over the season. I also looked at the top 10 teams in the college football playoff. Brandon Wimbush has played against six top 35 pass defenses. No one else has faced more than four, and some people have faced zero. He's faced two top 10 pass defenses. Nobody's faced more than one besides him. In terms of sub 85 or below, every team has faced at least one of those type teams. Auburn has faced six. Brandon Wimbush has faced zero because he missed the North Carolina game. Otherwise, he would have that. So he is a junior, but he's also a first-year starter, and he is facing – he's taking calculus as a first-year starter. And so I think there are some mitigating circumstances, and yet can this – you can't just say, okay, let's accept that. I think what you have to do is let's take some encouragement from some patterns here and let's build on that, because this may be – he may look back at this and say, boy, I'm glad I went through this my first year, because my second year, I am so much better for having gone against that kind of competition. But that's not a guarantee. The other thing I looked at, Darren, was a lot of the quarterbacks that have played for Brian Kelly haven't improved. You look at Tommy Reese's numbers, they're pretty flat-lined from freshman year to senior year. Kaiser, admittedly, with the worst supporting cast, went down. Zaire went down. Christ went down. Golson went up. He was one that did improve, although he had tons of turnovers, but his efficiency numbers were up. So that's something to keep an eye on. This is going to be a very interesting phenomenon as we get into next season and finish this season.
I brought this up a couple of times over the summer, and I wondered if it was going to be maybe at times unfair to evaluate Wimbush this year after what we saw DeShone Kaiser do in his first year, making it look so easy.
Kaiser is just off the charts in terms of first-year starters. There's nobody that compares to him in recent years. There's nobody close.
Let me follow up that question from Eric in Chicago by asking this to you. Bob from Tulsa then wrote in, with respect to the doubts about Reese's coaching ability, my question is, Brandon has been in the Notre Dame system for 2 years before 2017. Why did he come into this year with everyone making excuses that it takes time to develop accurate passing skills, and now people think it's Reese's problem?
Well, I think Reese can be part of the solution. I don't know that it's Reese's problem. He wasn't here those 2 years previously.
Correct.
So
I think that's the point Bob's making.
Yeah, but I think Reese can be part of the solution. It, you know, we talked about this the other day. Would Wimbush be better off if Reese were down on the sidelines and Chip Long was upstairs calling plays instead of flip-flop? You know, I think there's a lot of questions there. But I can see where those first 2 years for Brandon didn't result in a lot of progress. One is, until you're at game speed, there's some lessons you can't learn. There's some lessons you can't learn by taking mental reps. There's some lessons you can't learn by playing on the scout team. One thing I know about Brandon Wimbush, though, Darren, is we know that he worked with Evan Sharpley in the offseason. We know he worked with Madee Williams. We know he's gone to the guy that's the George, whatever his name is, Whitfield Jr.
Yeah.
We know that he's done all that stuff on his own dime, on his own time. So this is a guy that's pretty invested. So I think there's some questions there that we have to get to the bottom of. But I think the biggest question, Darren, is can it be fixed and how quickly? I think that's what, not so much how did he get here, but where can he go from here?
Going through some of the questions from Eric's chat at IndyInsider.com. And now we have a question. James from Columbus, do you think it would benefit the offense if Coach Long was up in the box instead of being on the field?
See, I think maybe the opposite is true, that Tommy Reese would benefit from being down on the field.
He's the only offensive eye in the sky, if I'm not mistaken.
He is. There are only two coaches, period,
right,
that are...
So how much can he focus on Wimbush, I wonder, in that scenario?
I don't know
what his job description is up there.
Right. And I think that's something that Notre Dame maybe will look at after the regular season's over. I don't think you change it right now, but I think, you know, Chip Long was willing to go either place, and I think they decided to have him on the field just so he got to know the players better and so forth. But then you're stuck with your quarterback's coach up top. You know, would he be better served being on the sidelines and having, you know, instead of trying to talk on the phone to Tommy, have him on the sidelines? I'm curious about that, and I'll probably ask about that on Thursday.
Sean from Columbus. Our offensive line is supposed to be one of the best in the country, but has struggled against elite defenses. Eric, help me understand how next year won't be more of the same if Nelson leaves for the NFL, and we probably shouldn't say if.
Yeah, it's not an if. I just think, again, I don't think that the offensive line is necessarily the problem. I think it's strategy, play calling, and so forth. And if Notre Dame learns from these games, from the Georgia game, I think they did to a certain extent. If you look at the NC State game, the first series looked like the Georgia game all over again. Bradley Chubb was dancing with Brandon Wimbush on the backfield. And then after that first series, that defensive line was pretty quiet. Notre Dame made some adjustments. And I think that's the key, is being able to make the adjustments and offsetting some of that penetration. And there's always counter moves, and Notre Dame didn't make them. So, you know, I think Brandon is going to be sad to see Quentin Nelson go to the NFL, but I don't think next year's offensive line is going to be a disaster by any means.
Tim of South Bend has this thought for you. He says he felt like Josh Adams was tentative in Saturday's game. Instead of hitting the holes hard, he seemed to be waiting back too long for things to develop. This is different than I have seen from him this year. Did you notice the same thing? Is there anything behind it?
I think Josh, by and large, is a patient back. He does kind of wait for things to develop, and then he shoots through the hole once they kind of develop and so forth. So I didn't see that necessarily as a difference in his style. The one thing is, he didn't look completely healthy to me, but again, that could have been Miami making him look that way. But that's kind of generally how he is. He's a guy that, you know, waits for his blocks to set up, and then he shoots through the hole and runs away from people.
Michael from West Virginia asks, Eric, are we still years away from competing with top teams based on our performance this past weekend?
If you're going to ask that question, then you're telling me October didn't exist.
Yeah. Because really good teams.
Because USC is statistically the best offense Notre Dame played. And not their defense isn't the best defense they played, but Georgia's is. Notre Dame certainly was more competitive against Georgia than they were against Miami. Miami's a good defense. They're very good pass defense. But there were opportunities there for Notre Dame that they didn't take advantage of.
Jeff from Phoenix, frustrated by the game on Saturday, he sees two areas of underperformance this year, special teams and tight ends. Do you think Poling and Long are meeting expectations in these areas? And do you see an elite athlete on the radar that can create fear for opponents on special teams?
I expected more from special teams this year, quite frankly. It is an improvement over last year. I think there's room for improvement. And let me go to the athlete on the radar. I think on the current roster, I think Michael Young and Troy Pride were a couple guys that I wouldn't mind seeing. You know, and maybe they just didn't trust Michael Young as a freshman to catch balls and not muff them in a big game in a big moment. Because I'll tell you what.
Fair catch, please.
Yeah, yeah. But you saw him, Darren, in August,
yeah,
and he can do some things in the return game. And Troy Pride is certainly capable of doing that, too. If they recruit Equanimeous' youngest brother, Amon-Ra St. Brown, there's your guy for punt returns and kickoff returns and wide receiver passes. I mean, he's a guy that's pretty dynamic. As far as the tight ends, I kind of understand where Jeff is going with this. The tight ends have 40 catches this year, and I put up a chart for Jeff to see how that compares mm-hmm. with other years. Last year it was 12. The year before it was 20. 40 is a pretty good number with two games left.
With a limited passing game.
With a limited passing game. But I kind of get where he's coming from in that I don't think that Alizé's talents have been completely utilized. I think there's a lot still out there for him because I still think he's a very difficult matchup, and I don't know that that's been completely utilized, and yet he's had some drops. So
yes,
I think it makes you a little gun-shy in that sense.
All right, I'm going to get to the last one really quick. Jane from Chicago, as Coach Holtz used to say, luck follows speed. Can this be fixed through conditioning, or is recruitment the answer to fix our speed deficits? I think the question is, do you believe there is a speed deficit?
I think they have been recruiting speed, and I think that it's going to continue to get better. You look at the positions where they need better athletes and not necessarily speed, and you can see it in their recruiting. They're recruiting over people at safety, at wide receiver, and at linebacker. Not that the starting linebackers aren't doing a good job, but they look down the road and they say, okay, who's going to replace Niles Morgan and Greer Martini? You know, who's that next really good linebacker that's going to step up and play with Tavon Coney next year? But again, I don't let this one game be the only judge of this season and where this program is. I think people overreacted because of the score and because of the expectation of this game. Let's let the yep. rest of the season play out.
You can read Eric's complete chat. The transcript is available right now at IndyInsider.com, and it will be in Friday's South Bend Tribune as well. My five question of the day is next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Let's put a capper on the Notre Dame-Miami game by asking Eric the five things that surprised him most about Miami beating the Irish 41-8 on Saturday. We begin with number five.
The Dexter Williams delay. I thought if there was a game, if he's healthy, if there was a game that you wanted to bring him in as a changeup runner early in the game, that was the game for a lot of reasons. One, he matches up well against Miami. Two, he was in Miami's recruiting class and Walton's recruiting class and ended up with Notre Dame. He wants to show Miami what they missed out on. So I'm when he came in the second half, he was effective.
Yeah. Number four.
That the turnover chain worked. You know, you have a 0-4 deficit and turnovers, the score's not going to be pretty no matter who you're playing. And I just was surprised Notre Dame made that many mistakes and weren't able to extract any from Miami.
The five things that surprised Eric the most from Saturday's loss to Miami. Number three.
Brandon Wimbush looking lost. It wasn't just the statistics. It was the body language. He looked deer in the headlights in the first half, and Kirk Herbstreit was pointing that out very astutely.
Number two.
Notre Dame falling off the big stage. I thought, you know, I had asked Brian Kelly what he had learned from that 2012 experience, and I thought that he would draw upon that to help them in this situation. And again, maybe just didn't feel that this game rose to that level until he was right in the middle of it.
And more than anything else, the thing that surprised you the most about Notre Dame losing to Miami Saturday 41-8.
That a guy that had been calling plays all year, Chip Long, for an offense on a school record pace for scoring, didn't do a really good job of offensive play calling in that game.
That is today's My Five Question of the Day from 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, if you picked up a South Bend Tribune today, you got page one of the Lansing State Journal, and that was not a bonus. So we are running
April Fools.
We are running the entire sports section of yesterday and today's sports section in tomorrow's Tribune. You'll in that particular section, you will get a high school football feature from Tom on Penn, kind of breaking down how to fix Brandon Wimbush from me. Indy women versus Western Kentucky. We didn't get that in last night. They won on the road. Chicago State at Notre Dame men's basketball advance and LNL Cy Young Awards. Follow up on Michigan State and Duke basketball and much, much more. And hopefully not the Lansing State Journal today.
Irish women beat Western Kentucky last night 78-65. Jessica Shepherd, the transfer from Nebraska. Boy, she's good. 19 points and 12 rebounds. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Sean joins me next on WSBT South Bend.
Your home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush. 58 yards. Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in. 92 yards.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame. 98 yards. 76-yard touchdown play to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside. Touchdown, Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front, Ogilvie. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Gets up and in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left! Notre Dame leads!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
7 minutes after the top of the hour, Sports Beat presented by Budweiser and Sport Clips on 96.1 FM WSBT. A reminder, tomorrow, a little bit of a schedule change. Normally, Thursday at 7 o'clock, you hear the Brian Kelly radio show on WSBT Radio. That show is moving for this week to our sister station, Z94.3 FM. Again, Brian Kelly radio show tomorrow night, 7 o'clock on 94.3 WZOC. Right here on WSBT Radio, it is Notre Dame basketball. The Fighting Irish will take on Chicago State. Pre-game tomorrow night at 6:40. The game begins at Purcell Pavilion at 7 o'clock. So there you go. Brian Kelly radio show tomorrow night on 94.3 Irish basketball tomorrow night at 7 o'clock right here on WSBT Radio. And I believe we will join Thursday Night Football at the conclusion of Irish basketball. It's the Tennessee Titans and the Pittsburgh Steelers, two division leaders in the American Football Conference, squaring off. And for all of you fantasy football freaks, if you have Zeke Elliott, he will not play until week 16. He has withdrawn his appeal, and he will now serve the final five games of his six-game suspension. I kind of wish he would have done it early on in the year that it's done with, but he wanted to prove his innocence, he said, but now has withdrawn the appeal.
Yep, and in the meantime, Jerry Jones is trying to bounce Roger Goodell and...
Can we just bounce Jerry Jones?
Long, twist, and suck. I know, right? And I think it's like he waited until he got in the Hall of Fame, and then he started taking all his big shots at Roger Goodell. I mean, I didn't see him putting up all kinds of a stink when Tom Brady was going through his stuff a couple of years ago. But Jerry's trying to prove a point, obviously. And I've said all along that I thought just the way things were going that Zeke should just take his medicine, get it over with. This year's team has its, even though they've been playing better defensively, they've had their troubles, and just get it over with so that you're not pushing it back until next year. But the one thing that I've always questioned, and obviously he and the girl know what happened, but the thing I've always questioned is the lead investigator in this whole thing recommended no punishment to Roger Goodell, but Goodell went forward with the punishment. And I think that's got to be part of what stuck in Jerry Jones' craw.
Without a doubt. So no Zeke Elliott. So I guess Alfred Morris is a guy that's probably been picked up by a lot of owners in many, many leagues.
Yep.
Probably will get a lot of touches now going forward for the Cowboys, who I believe, if I heard Rich Eisen correctly on WSBT Radio this afternoon, they're 10th in the NFC right now. How about that?
The Cowboys are?
Yeah.
I guess you don't really think of it that way, but yeah, when you're talking about playoffs and the whole thing.
Crazy.
Got the Eagles coming up this week. Big one.
Let me ask you as a Cowboy fan, because I only watch them randomly, is Notre Dame linebacker Jalen Smith, has his role been reduced a little bit? I haven't seen him as much on the field, except in certain situations.
He, especially when Sean Lee has been out, it's obvious that he's not even close to what he was. I would put him probably 65% at best to what his athleticism was.
Jalen, you're talking
about. Yeah, Jalen Smith, when he was at Notre Dame. When he's had to be out there, the times when Sean Lee has been hurt, he really has had trouble covering a lot of space. Mm-hmm. When Sean Lee is out there, his speed and everything he does makes up for it. But to answer your question, I don't know that it's necessarily been reduced, but he has not been a big impact guy, because it's obvious he still has a ways to go if he hopes to get back to 100% at some point. It's probably at least next year, if not 2 years, if it's ever going
to
happen.
So Sean Lee to the Dallas Cowboys is actually what Jalen Smith was to Notre Dame. He was that eraser that fixed a lot of problems.
Yep, exactly.
And now Sean's helping him along the way.
Right.
Okay. I was just curious. I just noticed there were times he wasn't on the field and was wondering what was going on with Jalen. So
yep.
I know they're still hoping that leg totally fires at some point. The foot, it's just...
Yeah,
so unfortunate.
Yep.
Notre Dame hockey defenseman Andrew Peak will join us at the bottom of this hour for some Irish hockey conversation. Notre Dame is number 4 in the nation, first place in the Big Ten Conference. Before we get to rapid fire college football playoff rankings, the new top 4, Alabama number 1, Clemson number 2, Miami 3, Oklahoma number 4. I fought for Clemson to be ahead of Miami on the show last night. Everybody is drinking the Miami Kool-Aid after they played so well against Notre Dame. I just felt like even though Clemson lost to Syracuse, they're a better football team, and I'm glad to see the committee had Clemson number 2. Your reaction to the top 4 or the Irish going from 3 to 8?
The top 4, Oklahoma, I think I would have still had at least number 3, if not number 2.
I agree. I
understand what you're saying. I mean, Oklahoma has all of a sudden taken off offensively. Maybe there are still some questions about their defense, but offensively, they're pretty hard to beat. And then when you just look at the resume, if you're going to compare them to the other top 4 teams, Oklahoma's played 3 teams that are in the top 15. Alabama's played number 16 and number 20. Clemson has played number 6 and number 9 as far as ranked teams, and Notre Dame is the only ranked team Miami has played this year. So if you're going to kind of split it by that, Clemson still does have the worst loss of any of these teams, and I would have Oklahoma, I think, up ahead of them.
Yeah, I've got Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Miami. I'm just not all in on the Hurricanes yet. I'm not going to be surprised Saturday when they're playing Virginia at home at noon. It's like 10-7 at halftime.
Yeah. It's
a huge letdown. That stadium is going to be empty to watch.
Yes. Not quite as excited for the old Hoos.
they're probably going to win the game because Virginia has kind of come back down to earth a little bit the last couple of weeks.
Yep.
But, I mean, Miami's played 2 really good games. And the rest, eh. So,
right.
Clemson-Miami will settle the ACC very, very soon, and we'll see which team will make the college football playoff.
It's amazing how this tidal wave has followed Miami since their resounding win over Notre Dame, whereas I think Notre Dame got some push after throttling USC the way they did, but I don't feel like they got
it was
as
steady.
Big a push. Yeah.
Hurricane is a tidal wave.
Because, yeah, I mean, they were both in prime time and the whole thing, and yeah, that's a good point. Hurricane is a tidal wave, yeah.
And then you had the Irish just kind of a steady flow.
Yep.
Moving up the rankings.
Right.
Now they fall back to number 8, and they need a ton of help to get back into the conversation for the top 4. 14 minutes after the top of the hour, how about some rapid fire?
All right, well, let's stick with some college football playoff stuff to start us off. Notre Dame fell 4 spots to number 8 in the CFP rankings. So do you see a path with them being at number 8? Do you see a path for them left in the playoffs?
I mentioned this the start of last hour. I think many things have to happen, but for me, the 2 things that stand out that have to happen, Alabama has to run the table and Miami has to run the table. I think those 2 things have to happen, because
right.
If Alabama goes undefeated, they take out Auburn and Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe Georgia stays ahead of Notre Dame in the rankings.
And that's the question, because you do have the head-to-head, yeah.
And you want Miami to run the table, because then they will beat Clemson. Because if Miami loses, they're going to stay ahead of you. So then you got Clemson and Miami ahead of you. Mm-hmm. So that's why I believe you want Alabama and Miami to run the table. Oklahoma has to lose to TCU. Wisconsin may have to lose twice. So it's a long laundry list. It's possible, yes, but it is very, very slim.
That's kind of what there's a path. It's a narrow path, but there is a path. Those things you talked about right there. And then what makes it even more interesting from a Notre Dame perspective is if you're a Notre Dame fan, you get to root for Michigan over the next couple of weeks, because you need Michigan to beat Wisconsin this weekend, and that's the first-ranked team Wisconsin has played all year. And then you need Michigan to beat their old arch-rival Ohio State to kind of knock Ohio State, make sure that they're out of it, keep them out of the whole thing. And as you said, Alabama needs to beat Auburn. And then Georgia, they do play Georgia Tech. So the odds of it happening, pretty slim. But you've got Georgia Tech. It's a rivalry game, and they've got their option offense. Georgia hasn't had to face that kind of offense. And then TCU, they still play Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game again, presumably. And then Miami would have to beat Clemson in the ACC championship game to knock Clemson back out of there. So narrow path. I think the longest shot of that whole deal is Georgia Tech knocking off Georgia. But I think conceivably you could see some of those other things happen. But obviously you need all of those things to happen, and that's the problem now.
You asked the rapid-fire question last week, which team in the top four is most likely to lose? And you and
that's
Eric
the next
took
question
Notre
right
Dame.
Now.
Yeah, you and Eric took Notre Dame. I took Georgia, so I guess we're all right on that one. Unfortunately,
I guess that's true. That's that the fact that they both lost the way they lost on the same day. That's just amazing to me, because they obviously had both been just playing so well. So the question now is: you've got Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, and Miami in the top four. Which one's most likely to fall out this week? And I don't know if you've looked at their schedules.
You know, I know who Alabama and Clemson are playing. I mean, yeah. This is the part that just
really challenging themselves late in the season.
Alabama is hosting Mercer.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got Clemson taking on the Citadel. Yeah. So I think we can probably eliminate those two teams. We got Oklahoma playing Kansas. Mm. Unless Danny Manning shows up and they start playing basketball. That's not happening. So that leaves us with the Miami Hurricanes, who are going to beat Virginia, but just for the process of elimination, it's got to be Miami.
Right. And just what you were talking about a second ago, you've got a noon kickoff. It's Virginia. It's going to be a lot more sleepy there. I don't think it's going to be dance party atmosphere for Miami and Virginia this week. But just what you said, process of elimination, that's the best chance. I don't think any of them are going to fall, but that would be the better chance out of all of them.
Yeah.
Okay, one more college football playoff question. If Wisconsin and Auburn both win out from here on out, would you buy or sell putting the two-loss Tigers in the playoff over the unbeaten Badgers?
You know how I feel.
Yep.
The record is part of the conversation. The ultimate goal is to get the four best teams into the playoff. Now, Auburn lost to Clemson. It's a pretty good loss.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost to LSU, top 25 team.
Mm-hmm.
So both losses within the top 25. Wisconsin has a chance to show their worth if they can beat Michigan, go to Minnesota and win, you beat Ohio State, they're going to have a lot more value. But head-to-head, would Auburn beat Wisconsin? My gut reaction is Auburn would win. So if Auburn beats Alabama, they have to beat Louisiana Monroe this week.
Oh, yeah.
This is the fun.
But still,
SEC
they play Alabama. Yeah, exactly.
If they beat Louisiana Monroe, they beat Alabama, they're in the conversation. I mean, they have to be. I mean, their strength of schedule is going to look really, really good. And then they would have that matchup probably. Yeah, it would be with Georgia in the SEC title game. So you could go Georgia, Alabama, Georgia as your wins late in the year. I think there is a strong argument when you look at the analytics and the eye test that Auburn is a better football team than Wisconsin. I believe Auburn would have an excellent chance to go undefeated using Wisconsin's schedule. They would have a chance to do that. I don't know if Wisconsin would be any better than a two-loss team that Auburn is playing the Tiger schedule. With that being said, I am open to that possibility.
I agree as well. I think you have to give it serious consideration because what they would have done, their resume, even though they have the two losses, it's going to look a lot better, especially if Clemson wins out, for example, and that is one of their losses. It's going to look a heck of a lot better. But when you start to look at these conferences, because we knock Wisconsin for the division they play in and the fact that there's nobody over there. And now Georgia's got a great defense. We all know that, but they did just get knocked around by Auburn. But I mean, the SEC East is not considerably better than the Big Ten West. I mean, there's not a whole lot out there for them. But and Auburn is obviously in the SEC West. But I'm just saying, so, I mean, it's not like beyond Notre Dame, it's not like Georgia had killed a lot of teams either. So maybe we shouldn't have been as shocked that Auburn was able to knock the heck out of them, even though their Georgia's defense impressed us a lot when they were here. But to answer this question, yeah, I think that Auburn has already played four ranked teams. Michigan's going to be the first ranked team that Wisconsin has played all season. So as tough as it would be to leave an unbeaten Power 5 conference champion out, I think you would have to really, I think Auburn would be more deserving to be in there over an unbeaten Wisconsin.
SEC opponents this week, Mercer, Louisiana Monroe, Wolford, UAB, and dare I say LSU's playing Tennessee.
There you go.
Sorry, not to pile on the Vols, but oof. Brady Hoke, he's going to wear a headset now as interim head coach of the Volunteers after never wearing a headset with the maize and blue.
Interesting.
That's a storyline down in Knoxville today.
All right. Oh, Brady Hoke. Okay. Let's move on to some Notre Dame-specific stuff. The Irish defense caused an average of over a little over two takeaways per game in their first seven games this season. But they've had just a total of two takeaways over the last three games against Wake Forest, NC State, and Miami. On a scale of 1 to 10, how big a concern is this, the lack of takeaways against those three teams?
Boy, that's a tough question just because
this kind of came up, what is it, yesterday at the press conference with Brian Kelly.
I don't know how to answer that because there is a bit of random turnovers sometimes. Sometimes you create them.
I'll help you with a little bit because obviously I was able to research this. You didn't
go in blind.
Yeah, you didn't. You go into this blind. But I knew that especially Wake Forest and NC State hadn't committed a lot. We knew that Miami hadn't really committed a lot. But I put this at a two because Wake Forest currently ranks second in the nation in fewest turnovers lost. Wake Forest is fourth in fewest, and Miami is ninth. So those three games, as you said, there's some randomness that comes to it, but those three teams, Wake Forest, NC State, and Miami, are all in the top 10 in terms of fewest turnovers lost this season. So for that reason, I'm like, yeah, you'd like to have some takeaways, obviously, but these are three teams, while Notre Dame is really good at causing turnovers, these are three teams that are really good at protecting the ball. Those three teams have committed a total of 24 turnovers, whereas you look at USC, they've got 21 by themselves. So the three teams they just played, a total of 24, USC by themselves has committed 21. So I don't think it's panic time, because you look at NC State, that was the first interception that quarterback had thrown all season. Julian Love took it to the house. Wake Forest, that was only the third interception he had thrown. And Love almost got that into the end zone. And Miami takes care of the ball as well. So I don't think there's any panic. If you're going out there this week now, Miami, or a Navy rather, has a -7 turnover ratio for the season. If Notre Dame doesn't get at least a couple against the midshipmen, then there's some reason for concern. But these three teams, because of the way they take care of the ball, not as big a concern at all, I don't think.
Not going to top what you just said. Well said.
As I said, I get the benefit of doing some of the research. Darren got it sprung on him. So that's, I mean,
that's a good answer.
Not as concerned.
I would have had a low number anyway, but that's great analysis.
Okay, all right.
We got time for one more.
Okay. I'll throw this one at you. Sam Mustipher, Alex Bars, Jay Hayes, and Drew Tranquil. They are all among players who have remaining eligibility who are going to be honored for Senior Day Saturday. So which of those four guys the most likely to stay? Which is the most likely to declare for the NFL draft?
Hayes, Mustipher, Tranquil, and...
Hayes, Mustipher, Tranquil, Alex Bars.
Mustipher says he's coming back, so I would say he's a definite then.
Is he kind of one of those, I'm coming back, but...
I'm going by what he said.
Okay.
I'm going to go by what he said.
We're going to take him at his word. Okay.
I really think all four will come back.
Do you?
I would think so. I mean, Tranquil might have the option, but I'm not sure of his position in the NFL at this point. I haven't gotten into that analysis.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's a...
couple weeks, it might be Charlie Campbell time and get him to start talking about some of these guys.
Yeah. Mustipher says he's staying, so I'm going to believe him.
Yeah, and that's... to me, I saw the comment Tranquil made today. He didn't sound 100% that he would be back. So if I were going to put him in order from... most likely to come back to least likely, I'd go Alex Bars, Jay Hayes, Mustipher, Drew Tranquil.
And Tranquil has two major knee surgeries behind him, and that could be something to think about in your decision.
That's the biggest thing. I think if I'm Drew Tranquil, if I get a second-round grade, I don't know, third round, but if I get a second-round grade and I'm Drew Tranquil, because it does sound, just some of the stuff that I've heard, it does sound like his stock is coming up, and deservedly so based on the way he's played. If he gets a second round grade based on his injury history, I think he's got to really look long at that and think about going.
That's Rapid Fire. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett. You'll hear from Fighting Irish hockey defenseman Andrew Peak next. As Sports Beat continues, brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips on WSBT. It is 26 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sports Beat is presented by Budweiser and Sport Clips on 96.1 FM WSBT, along with Sean Stiers. I'm Darren Pritchett. We are still efforting. Notre Dame hockey defenseman Andrew Peak will try to make communications over the next couple of moments. In the meantime, let me pass along this little piece of information. The three UCLA basketball players that allegedly had some shoplifting issues while over in China, apparently in three different stores in 90 minutes of free time.
Wow.
LiAngelo Ball, Cody Riley, and Jalen Hill. Well, head coach Steve Alford and UCLA had some decisions to make that got them back here in the country. And suspensions, what type of issues are they going to have to deal with the UCLA basketball program and the university? Here's what Steve Alford had to say earlier this afternoon.
These three young men will remain suspended indefinitely from our program as we work through the review process with the university's Office of Student Conduct. During that indefinite suspension, they will not travel with the team, nor will they suit up for home games. At some point, they may be permitted to join team workouts, practices, and meetings, but that timeline has yet to be determined.
I have a hard time believing they're going to play anytime soon, considering the allegations against these guys. It's one thing to do it in the United States, but when you go to another country, you're not only representing yourself, your family, your university, but also the United States.
Exactly.
And this is pretty doggone embarrassing. So I know there's been some talk that they should be suspended for the entire year. I'm not sure what the magic number is. I would not complain if it's the entire year, but it better not be two or three games. Considering Steve Alford's history at Iowa dealing with some issues that
are
far more disgusting than this, I have my doubts he will handle this situation perfectly, but I hope I'm proven wrong.
And I agree. I mean, you go to another country, and it's a communist country to boot, and they're very fortunate. I had this conversation with somebody earlier today. If they weren't connected to UCLA, if it was just you and me or average Joe, whoever, you know, we'd still be in jail over there in China right now. So they're very fortunate that they are somewhat, high profile, and they have this connection, and they're even back in the States right now. But Seth Greenberg was saying on ESPN last night, he thinks, as you kind of just mentioned, mm-hmm. that they should be suspended for the entire season. I think that's a bit too much. I think it's a pretty big mistake that they made, but these are still really young guys who made a mistake, and they're guys who continue to play a lot of different sports for doing more than this, quite frankly. So I don't think, as you said, it should be two or three games. I think at probably a minimum, they should have to sit through their non-conference schedule, see what happens after that. They need to pay some kind of price other than just a slap on the wrist. But I do think that the entire season would be a bit much.
Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. It's time to talk some Fighting Irish hockey. Notre Dame is ranked number 4 in the country in both college hockey polls and currently reside in first place in the Big Ten Conference with a record of 4-0. The Fighting Irish are coming off a 2-game home series sweep of conference foe, the Penn State Nittany Lions, including a dramatic 1-0 victory on Saturday. The Fighting Irish have won 5 games in a row, and they will hit the road for a non-conference series Friday and Saturday in lovely Troy, New York,
hey!
Where they will take on RPI. And joining us right now is Fighting Irish sophomore defenseman Andrew Peek. In 12 games along the Irish blue line this year, 1 goal, 6 assists, and he is +6 in plus-minus rating. And he joins us now on WSBT Radio. Andrew, it's Darren. Good to talk to you. How are you this evening?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you so much for your time. We greatly appreciate it. I want to start with this. You're from Parkland, Florida. Now, we know that hockey players are coming from everywhere now, but give us some background. Being from the state of Florida, what got you interested in the great game of hockey?
Well, both my parents are from up north, and my dad especially is from Michigan, so he was always a big Red Wings fan growing up. And then the Panthers, Florida Panthers, rank is about 15 minutes from my house back home, so I was able to go to games since I was 6 months old, and I kind of fell in love with the game at a young age because of their influence on me. So it kind of just led me to growing up and playing hockey down there in Florida.
And when did you start skating, and when did you start playing hockey?
I started skating when I was about 3 years old.
Wow.
And I started playing hockey when I was about 4 or 5.
Hockey is obviously, it's been, what, probably within the last 20, 25 years, the Sun Belt mm-hmm. has taken off with these professional teams, whether it's Miami or Arizona, California, the whole thing. How is it supported in a state like Florida as far as youth hockey? Are there a lot of ice arenas and stuff like that for you guys to play in?
Yeah, where I'm from, the Panthers practice facility has 3 rinks in it. And then there's a couple other rinks within 20 to 30 minutes that have 2 ice sheets in it as well. So, like, down where I am, there's a bunch of ice rinks starting to come up, and it's just expanding everywhere. Like, you hear about top players coming out of these areas now, and there's a lot of travel hockey players where I'm from and a lot of kids that I'm friends with back home that are good hockey players in college, too. So it's really expanding.
Fighting Irish hockey defenseman Andrew Peek, our guest here on WSBT Radio. Andrew, this Fighting Irish hockey team has won 5 consecutive games, played extremely well in Columbus, beating Ohio State in back-to-back games, and then 2 victories over a very good offensively-minded Penn State hockey team last weekend at Lefty Smith Rink. During this 5-game winning streak, can you point to a couple of things that maybe has changed compared to October that has allowed you guys to play a little more consistent hockey over the last couple of weeks?
I think one of the biggest things for us was our starts on the first game of the weekend, and we've been pretty inconsistent throughout the early parts of the year on our first game. And I think us being able to get a win on that first night just was able to provide us with the opportunity to get a sweep on the past 2 weekends. And I think our team just kind of reached a point when we were inconsistent where we wanted to make a change, and just looking at a lot of games now with a couple of the losses we've had to get us into, like, the big picture. And I think we've all kind of bought into it. So it's really worked out for us the past few weeks.
Andrew, after coming off the trip to the Frozen Four. Was there sort of a different energy level, different excitement level starting practice and things like that getting into the start of this season?
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, being able to go to the Frozen Four was an unbelievable experience, and all the guys that were there last year were able to kind of grasp what it was like, and just the buzz that was coming around our team again. Even though we did lose Anders and Cal, we still have a great team, and the ability we have to go far this year, we all know we can do it. So just bringing up the freshmen and getting them to like realize what we have as a team this year is pretty special.
I know, Andrew, with the Irish football team just having gone down to Miami, and there's a lot of talk about just the atmosphere and all the distractions. Maybe that was something the team wasn't totally prepared for. You guys had to play at the United Center in the Frozen Four in front of 22,000 fans. It was a very unique environment. It was a great environment to be in, and now we found out this week the Irish are going to play Wisconsin at the United Center, and it seems like it's a chance for you guys to play in one of those NHL buildings once again. Just thinking about the Frozen Four, was it a little different than a normal hockey game? Just the environment that was created at the Frozen Four, did it have a different feel?
Well, I mean, any time you get to play in a sold-out NHL rink, it's going to be a little different. I thought a lot of us took the game as the same way it was with the game, but the moment it presented was something that might have caught us off guard or kind of took us away from what we were doing on the ice, worrying about what the fans and everything like that was going to be like. So I think just this time around, just focusing on, like, it's the same game no matter where we play. So just taking that into account, and just obviously it's going to be a fun time being able to play back there again. But I think just focusing on that specific game and trying to block out what's around us.
You guys are off to a good start in conference play and Big Ten play. You won your first four games as members of the Big Ten Conference. How is the style of play different in the Big Ten compared to the Hockey East, which you were in last year?
Well, I think it's much more faster and a lot more offensive, which helps us out too, because we're a really fast team too, and the way we play our game don't frustrate other teams offensively because of the way we play defense, the way we play in the neutral zone. And I think it just fits our mold as a team. And obviously coming into a new conference, all the teams are going to want to beat us right away and kind of send us a statement. But we've kind of wanted to get off to an early start as we have and show them that we're not messing around. We did change conferences, but we're going to be the same type of team we've always been. So it's been a good start for us in the Big Ten.
What did you think about the move to the Big Ten? Were you excited or any particular feeling?
Yeah, I was extremely excited. All the places that we're going to be going to have awesome rinks and fans and schools. So
always helps.
Definitely going to be it's definitely going to be a good experience, and they're all really good hockey teams. So every time we play a team, it's going to be competitive every night. And for me, especially being able to play one season in Hockey East, that was cool for me. Being able to experience what it was like there on the East Coast, also. So having both in my college career is going to be pretty cool.
I'm going to second Andrew's thoughts. As the broadcaster, some of the places I had to broadcast from in Hockey East compared to the Big Ten, I'm very excited about the Big Ten Conference.
Well, and we kind of had this conversation before. These are all football schools now, too,
yes,
just like Notre Dame. So there's sort of a like-mindedness around the whole thing.
Without question. And Andrew, how about Cale Morris the last couple of weeks? Big Ten first star after his great performance against Penn State. How would you describe his style and the way he has played the last couple of weeks for your team?
Yeah, he's been a rock back there. He's been battling, and he's been obviously making a lot of saves for us, and that's what we need. Obviously, with the departure of Cal, we needed someone to step up, and Dylan had a great game against Denver early on, but Cale recently has been on a little hot streak, and that's been awesome for us, especially against Penn State when they had about 40 shots because of the way they played, and he was able to stop about pretty much all of them, or in the second night he had a shutout. So it's awesome having the confidence that he's going to be back there and he's going to be making saves that we need him to make. So it's been awesome, and he's been battling, and it's very deserving for him so far. So it's been really good for us.
Andrew, I think back to the Northeast Regional up in New Hampshire, the game against Minnesota. We're down 2-0. We were kind of looking for something to change the tide, and it was our goaltender Cal Peterson getting the puck and firing at the length of the ice to the Minnesota blue line, setting up a goal that kind of ignited the Fighting Irish on the comeback trail. And of course, they beat Minnesota and beat Lowell to go to the Frozen Four, but it brings me to this year. You've got two goaltenders that love to move the puck, Dylan St. Cyr and, of course, Cale Morris. How does that change you as a defenseman, knowing you've got a guy that's more than willing to leave the crease and move the puck? Does it change the way you have to pay attention or change the way you play the game, having two guys that love to move the puck?
Well, yeah, it's definitely helpful as a defenseman when you don't have to always go back into the corners and know you're going to get hit every time. And it's good having a goalie that's able to play the puck and move it side to side or rim it around the boards to get it out of the zone. And being able to have that's really important for us because it allows us to jump in the play quicker and transition quicker. So knowing that a goalie can make plays back there is awesome for a defenseman.
Yeah, you talked about the fact that you're from Florida, but just kind of looking at your bio, I mean, you graduated from high school in Wisconsin. You also went to a prep school in Connecticut. Just from a – maybe can you describe what it's like when you're – once you figure out you're pretty good at hockey and that's what you want to pursue, what is that whole process like about the next steps? Because it's pretty unique when you're still that young compared to other sports.
Yeah, well, growing up, I played travel baseball and travel hockey, and I'll probably be honest, I was probably better at baseball than I was at hockey growing up, and the team I played on was, like, fifth in the state, which is pretty awesome for Florida, so yeah. I was a huge baseball guy, and there came a point where I had to make a decision. It was around 12 or 13, and I kind of knew that I was a bigger guy, which helped for hockey, like, at a younger age. And, I mean, I think I just loved hockey much more and wanted to pursue it more, so I made the decision to stick with hockey. And then when I was obviously leaving, we're going to high school, I had to make the decision to leave Florida or not and actually, like, seriously pursue a hockey career. And my coach in Florida kind of influenced me to make that decision and told me that I have a good chance to actually be a really good hockey player if I make this decision, so... Going up there to Connecticut, I've kind of like changed the way I viewed hockey and kind of the motivation it made me have to want to be a real good hockey player. So that leave when I was 14 was what kind of changed my career.
Irish hockey defenseman Andrew Peake is our guest. My final question for you, Andrew. 99.9% of the people listening to you right now have never experienced what it's like to be drafted by a professional team. You were drafted by the Columbus Blue Jackets 2016, second round, number 34 overall, six picks before your current teammate Cam Morrison was selected by the Colorado Avalanche. Can you describe what it's like on draft day and then hearing your name called, knowing that you're going to eventually be a part of a professional hockey organization?
It was probably one of the best, feeling I had at that moment, and just being able to, like, hear that name called and out of nowhere when you necessarily weren't expecting it or you didn't know that that'd be the team to call you, and hearing it be called early that second day was pretty special, and being able to share that moment with my brother and my parents was pretty awesome, and it's something that I'll never forget and something that not a lot of people obviously get the opportunity to have, so it was definitely one of those moments that you'll never forget and just be able to cherish it the rest of your life.
Andrew Peake, a member of the Fighting Irish hockey team, number 4 in the country at RPI this weekend. They'll play Friday and Saturday on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. Andrew, great job. Greatly appreciate the time, and good luck this weekend and the rest of the year.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thank you so much. Andrew Peake of the Fighting Irish hockey team joining us here on WSBT Radio. Great game in Chicago last night. Number 1 Duke held on to beat number 2 Michigan State. 88-81. Here's Duke head coach Mike Krzyzewski.
Yeah, well, it's a big time win for us. You know, Tom has a great program at Michigan State, and they're a veteran team, and our perimeter with Grace and Trayvon and Gary really kept us alive.
Grayson Allen, 37 points to really hurt Michigan State. Tom Izzo, 1-10 against Mike Krzyzewski.
It's probably some positive things that maybe I'll figure out in a couple days, but it won't be tonight. And give Duke credit, but I give us some blame. And we're going to have to live with that. We had an opportunity. We were up 2, and we just didn't lock up like we could, and we didn't rebound like we could.
Michigan State played well except for the last 3 minutes. They just got beat by a scary team. Duke is scary looking this year. I hate to say that.
And your face of college basketball, Grayson Allen, had a heck of a game.
Notre Dame plays both of those teams, and they both looked extremely good last night. In Kansas, a very nice win over the Kentucky Wildcats. Fun night of college basketball. It is a couple of minutes in front of the top of the hour at WSBT. Sports be brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds and buy Sport Clip.